This is the podcast for March 30th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from deep inside Mitt Romney's automotive elevator shaft, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Happy blog-iversary, Driftglass.
Happy blog-iversary to me. Thank you, Blue Gal. Thank you. You knew me when?
Not as well as I do now.
Back in the day. Yes. Boys and girls and cats and kittens, it's 7 years since I started blogging.
Yeah.
And a year longer than that since I started commenting and following the blogs. But 7 years, which is it's a very long time.
And people who don't know, the reason you started blogging is because Steve Gilliard said, get the hell out of here.
He did. I was a regular commenter at the news blog, the late Stephen Gilliard's news blog. And I used to write long, I write like I write.
Yeah.
And he was amused by some of them. Some of them he hauled up to the front page and posted it up there. And he finally just said, get the fuck out of here.
You have your own blog. You need to start.
These can't be lost in the comment section. You have to go do your own writing now, which is what Marcos Melitis sort of did for him.
Yeah.
Stephen Gilliard was one of the first, or if not the first, front pager at Daily Coast back when it was just a few thousand people a day, or a few hundred people a day. And he did for me what Marcos did for him, and I miss him terribly.
You passed it on. I have a few people to the front page of yours, and
I have several blog kinder of my own, and as do you.
Yeah.
As do most people. And it is still a source of astonishment to me, and I mean this absolutely sincerely, that anybody comes over to read anything I write ever.
Oh, I feel the same way, too.
And
I'll be 8 in November, Election Day.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. And I figured I have about 3.5 to 4 million page reads over the last 7 years, which is a lot, which gives me vertigo every time I think about it.
Well, anyway, happy blogiversary, and Driftglass is having his own fundraiser over at Driftglass. Driftglass.blogspot.com,
where you can come see me as a very young man in a very loud jacket.
Oh, when your mom handed over that picture, I just went, "Oh, you have to put this on the blog. So good." So go over and look at him as a 14-year-old. I think you were.
I think it was 13.
Wow.
I turned 14 later in the fall. I posted something when I was a little itty bitty child for my 50th birthday blogiversary or 50th birthday fundraiser.
Regular birthday, yeah.
So I'm incrementally creeping up to my present age. I figure in about 6 or 7 years I'll post a nearly current picture of my haggard Irish self, and you can all go, "Oh God, please take that down." Anyway,
well, I want to mention one other thing, and that is that next weekend is Easter weekend. Easter weekend every year is Blog Against Theocracy, this year is tremendously easy.
Yeah.
So last year was hard. It's interesting. Last year was hard, and this year it's just an easy thing to do. Just blog about Rick Santorum or the Pope, and you're all set.
There's enough bad faith going, if you'll pardon the pun, sloshing around out there in our culture right now to make it easy for anybody who wants to write about why it's important to keep church and state separate.
And that's what it's about. It's not anti-religion. It's not about hating anyone. It's about separation of church and state and how that benefits everybody, from atheists to Roman Catholics, all the way down the road. It is really about separation of church and state. We recommend that everyone go to AU, that's A for Apple, A for Americans, U for United, which is Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. It's AU.org. They have a lot of really good information, and I renewed my membership there this week in honor of Blog Against Theocracy. So do go over there and take a look at all
the... you're a card-carrying member.
I'm a card-carrying member of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Right.
God, yeah.
There's a lot of news this week, and virtually all of it is not related to the election, not related to the primaries, which is kind of refreshing, I think. We need a little break.
Yeah, it's a slog through no man's land now. Yeah. It's trench warfare now, and everyone's grimly getting into line behind who everybody knew would be the nominee.
Yeah, so we're not going to talk too much about that this week. First of all, we want to congratulate Rachel Maddow on her book, and she's been everywhere this week. In particular, there was a very good interview on Fresh Air, as there are always good interviews on Fresh Air, but gets a little more in-depth than just the five-minute TV appearances that she's been making all week.
Yeah.
And there's been news related to the military-industrial complex, which is the subject of her book, you know, how the military-industrial complex runs our foreign policy and our military.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, I should say how we have incrementally across multiple administrations and political parties given the executive power, the executive branch, way too much power.
And you might note that in 2007, I believe it was, I donned a Darfur T-shirt and posted my question to the Democratic YouTube debate. And my question was, will you roll back executive power that was grabbed by George W. Bush?
Yeah.
And no one ever answered that question. And Rachel Maddow's absolutely right. Presidents don't give back power.
No,
Congress has to grab it back.
No.
That's what has to happen.
Because however you think of them as people, they think of themselves. No, you know, nobody – this is something we talked about yesterday with regarding Alan Rickman, believe it or not.
Yeah.
His voice can melt anvils.
Yes.
That as an actor, you have to understand that nobody wakes up in the morning and thinks of themselves as a villain.
Yeah, and that's how he acts. And I heard an interview with him where he said that. Like, no one wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to do evil today. No, you have a motive in your mind that's good enough for doing what you're going to do.
Right. It's sufficient. Yeah. And presidents are humans. And they get into office like anybody else does. They have power like anybody else does. And they use the power that is at their disposal to do what they think they have to do or they believe they must do or promise someone else to do or whatever. But it is – and this was an argument that we all had at the end of the Bush administration.
I was going to ask you, Drift Glass, are vice presidents human?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, some of them are nearly 51% organic matter. And I believe that qualifies by some Robert Heinlein.
We are not making Dick Cheney heart transplant jokes this week.
No.
We're just not. So moving on.
That's too easy. That's just too goddamn easy. But the point being, at the end of the Bush administration, I say we collectively as liberals, but I do remember you specifically and me to a lesser degree and others were saying to conservatives, look, the executive power that you have applauded George Bush for seizing is now sitting on the table. Are you comfortable with President Hillary Clinton having that kind of power?
Yep. Yep.
And the answer was always, well, that'll never happen.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't like, no, it's a bad idea. And seriously, it doesn't really matter how much you trust the president, how much you trust them. I'll just say this. I'll be very clear about this. If I were Barack Obama, if I had spent years, the last few years, just being excoriated, having everything I wanted to do blocked, trying my level best to save the country as I believe it should be saved, not the way Drift Glass thinks it should be saved, but the way I, Barack Obama, making a good faith effort to fix problems and compromise on everything just to get somebody on board with me and have every single fucking thing I do shot down. Everything, no matter what. And every motive of mine is immediately questioned as racist or Kenyan or socialist. And that up to and including saying really nice things about Trayvon Martin and sympathetic things about his family immediately became this awful racist Barack Obama. If I had to face that every day from a mob, but from an organized political opposition who is perfectly willing to tap the ugliest instincts in this country to destroy me no matter what, and I felt I needed to go and invade a country or take military action somewhere, I would be extremely tempted to bypass Congress by any means necessary. I would, if I felt Libya was ripe for the taking and it was in our national interest to do so, and I found a way around having my blackness, my Kenyanness, my loyalty to my country and my birth debated in Congress forever before they blocked everything I did, I might well take it. And so the flip side to executive power is how broken Congress is.
Absolutely. And I also wanted to mention something I think I've said before on this podcast, the comment thread over at Pammy Atlas's blog, where she, I think it was in 2009, lost her mind because Barack Obama could know what library books she was checking out.
Yep.
And there was no connection between that and the fact that the Bush administration wanted the Patriot Act passed. Everybody wanted the Patriot Act passed except for one senator.
A handful of loud liberals.
Yeah, and so I went on the comment thread. I waded into the comment thread of Pammy Atlas's blog and said, come on, Pammy, let's work together. It would be major news if you and I worked together to repeal the Patriot Act. Let's do a blog swarm, conservative and liberal, together to repeal the Patriot Act while Barack Obama's president. I'm willing to go there. Let's do it. Let's take power away from Barack Obama. Let's do that. And no one in the comment thread would even go along with that at all. And one person was actually had enough candor to say, I have to say, I trusted George W. Bush and I don't trust Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And this is about. So there was one commenter who had that much candor. Otherwise, it was just, well, la, 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 la. You know, it's not about Bush. Bush isn't president anymore, you know.
And this really does get down to Rachel Maddow's book is an indictment of our entire political system and how it has and how it has incrementally failed itself, how people have acted for good motives or bad, how power has been ceded to a central authority.
And private interests.
Because of corporate interests, private interests, political agendas, and expedience.
Yep.
And that it really should be hard for this country to go to war. We should have to debate it every fucking time. I remember on the show you and I were discussing how, however much we agreed or disagreed with the outcome, how proud we were of the way the debate for the first Gulf War was conducted.
Yeah, you and I talked about that off camera. Yes.
Yes, and it was a
fact that George H.W. Bush had an exit strategy, which was we're not going to Baghdad, we're not going that far. We're going to get this taken care of and end it. And so,
and however much we want to, we also want to remember that April Glasby and the Bush administration baited Saddam Hussein into invading Kuwait in the first place. And however many lies the Kuwaitis told, and lying press was ginned up.
Absolutely.
The actual debate over going to war in Kuwait was conducted with a certain amount of honor and honesty that you do not have anymore in this country. We just don't do it. And I think part of that is, and this is sort of speaking of war, I firmly believe we are engaged now in a civil war in this country that's being conducted just slowly enough to prevent the mainstream media motion detectors from being tripped.
And let's go back to that in just a minute, because our topic number two is culture war, and I want to get to that. But I want to finish up with Rachel Maddow.
Please.
And there are three items that are related to Rachel Maddow's book that are not discussed in her interviews. The New York Times had an article on March 24th about the Egyptian arms dealers, or the U.S. arms dealer manufacturers, like Lockheed Martin, and their contracts determining whether or not the State Department will continue to give military aid to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about whether it's right or whether the Egyptian government proceeds on its democratic path or not, or oppresses its people or not. The State Department is being dictated to by Lockheed Martin and the contracts that the Pentagon has with Lockheed Martin.
Period. That's it. Martin runs,
runs the
a
State
consortium
Department.
Of other Grumman
military,
and a bunch of others.
Right.
They run the Defense Department.
Yep,
they do. And they get what they want
and
because
the
they have set the system up. And the State Department, they've set the system up so that they are irreplaceable.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone depends on them.
There's another podcast that I want to recommend to people that I discovered this week, and other people may already know about it, but I discovered it this week. It's called Electric Politics, and it is George Kenney's podcast. He is an editor at In These Times. A couple of weeks ago, he had a podcast with Winslow Wheeler, who is a former whistleblower in the Defense Department. And it was fascinating. It's not a funny podcast by any by any stretch of the imagination, but it's these two guys who've done all kinds of things in their careers and really know their stuff. Mm-hmm. And they are talking in this podcast on the back of an envelope about the defense budget and about how much the United States spends on military spending, which they spend more, we spend more than the next 10 countries
combined
mm-hmm. on military spending. And this is just a back of the envelope. Let's add this up where all this money is. And so George Kenney will say, well, okay, so military aid and tanks and so forth to Israel. No, that's not in the Defense Department budget. That's in the State Department budget. Oh, okay. Maintaining our United States nuclear stockpile. No, that's not in the Defense Department budget. That's in the Energy Department budget. Oh, okay. Then, and you go on and on and on, and it's like all of these departments that certain Texas governors said they wanted to eliminate.
All have these.
All have deep pockets in military spending.
Full of military money that isn't in the Defense Department.
It isn't in the Defense Department. And so you get to the point where, yeah, the Defense Department budget is so many billion dollars, but if you add in all this other stuff, it's $1 trillion.
Uh-huh.
With a T. It just is.
Well, and when you start subtracting all those things, mm-hmm. and the blob of money that the Defense Department gets doesn't change,
yeah.
then you start asking, where does all that money go again?
Well, and not to get all Ron Paul on anybody, but it's never audited. It's too big and it's too wide to be audited. But these two guys, and again, it's Electric Politics. They're on iTunes and they have a website. Just go Google Electric Politics. You'll find them. And it's from a few weeks ago. And it's a really good – I listened to it twice. It's a really good podcast about just where this crazy money goes.
Mm-hmm.
Finally,
your tax dollars.
Your tax dollars.
Yes.
And you know, the unsustainable debt that our Republican colleagues are talking about all the time, right? This uh-huh. is where it's going. Finally, you and I get emails from Crane's Chicago and Greg Hines's blog, which is Chicago-based,
uh-huh.
where he talks about Chicago hosting the NATO summit.
Yep.
They were supposed to host the Olympics, of course, and that fell through.
Uh-huh.
And also the G8 summit. And Barack Obama moved that to a more private location.
An undisclosed location.
No, yeah. It's not undisclosed.
No.
He's going to have it at Camp David, which, yeah. you know, security's a little bit more secure there, uh-huh. I guess. I guess during an election year, he didn't want to have occupy the G8, which.
Yeah.
You know,
come on, man.
I think there's going to be some occupying going on this summer no matter what. So that's a good thing. But Greg Hines was talking about this morning on his blog about NATO and the NATO summit that's going on in Chicago this summer. And good news for Chicago taxpayers, they don't have to be paying for summit related services, as he calls them.
Yay.
Because $36.5 million is coming from private companies like Boeing, Caterpillar, McDonald's, and Abbott Labs.
Yep.
And, I mean, we've asked this question before about what does it cost us when private corporations fund public services? And there is a cost involved in that. And it bothers me so much that mm-hmm. we think, well, you know, good news for the taxpayer, we're going to post, you know, it's one thing when it's a sports stadium, or is it?
Uh-huh.
You know, when do we allow ourselves to have public spaces and public functions? And when everything is privatized,
mm-hmm.
we lose something as a society. And this in particular, I find incredibly heinous.
Well, this is straight out of like the Space Merchants.
Yeah.
A novel I touch on, you know, repeatedly in my blog over the years, where advertisers, this is the 1954-55 novel, science fiction novel, Everybody Drink.
Take a drink, yes.
But it's I strongly recommend anybody out there grab a copy of a dog-eared copy, a library copy, and read the thing, because you will be absolutely stunned at how sarcastically predictive it was of a lot of things. And what the core of the novel is, it all science fiction is written on a what-if premise. What if this goes on? What if this trend continues? And the core of this novel and a lot of Kuttner and Kornbluth and other people's work was, what if advertisers take over the world? What if the world is run by marketing guys, advertisers, and mega corporations that own whole continents? And well, the answer is, you get the NATO summit being sponsored by McDonald's.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Yeah. That's how it looks. And so we have come in the half century since this was pure speculative nonsense science fiction. It's become mundane, so mundane that we don't even notice it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
On a more personal note, I did listen this morning to Rachel Maddow's interview with Terry Gross. I listened to all of it. And there's a couple of points at which she talks about her personal life and depression. And that rings very true with what I went through, postpartum depression that I went through. So I really recommend that you listen to her talk about her depression and how it makes her feel. No one who watches her on TV would ever think that she deals with depression, but she does.
Yeah.
And that is inspiring.
She doesn't look Irish, but.
And the other thing that she talks about, and this isn't on a note related completely to our podcasting experience, she talks about how her show is put together.
Yeah.
And I really had to hold it in because she talks about it, and it is exactly what you and I do every week.
Uh-huh.
It is, we read and read and read and read and read for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, and we filter things and try to figure out what fits and what doesn't and how this particular piece. I mean, you and I just went through the theme of Rachel Maddow's book. We came up with three completely separate links that are directly related to the topic of her book that she doesn't mention.
Right, the bear on it and advance the conversation.
Advance the conversation. Yeah. We do this every week.
Uh-huh.
She's lauding her young producers that she has in her show.
And our dirty little secret is we would be doing this every week whether we podcast or not.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is what we do.
How our brains work, but.
But as one of the things I really like about George Kenney's podcast is on his podcast website, he talks about fundraising. And he made me see in his Electric Politics podcast notes, he says, nothing that I do is free.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And yep. I thought, whoa, that really hit me.
Uh-huh.
You know, we appreciate so much your financial support, and I know we usually pitch this at the end of the show, but you pay a cable bill to get Rachel Maddow, and she has 8 or 9, you know, 20-something producers mm-hmm. feeding her stuff, writing her stuff, doing her thing.
Yeah.
The podcasts that you listen to don't have any of that, and they vary in quality, and they vary in, you know,
sure.
whether you love them or not, but if mm-hmm. you love a podcast, give $5 to that podcast because they need it and they work hard for it.
Yeah.
Whether it's mine or someone else's, support it, please.
And this is the end product for good or for ill. We're doing this on Friday afternoon, literally pounding this out on horseback because we filtered and filtered, but we have very busy, lots of complications and so on. This is nobody's business or of interest to anyone in particular, but I will say that when I work as a consultant, when I have worked as a consultant, I would have billed out the hour I spent just talking at about $120 an hour.
Yeah. Oh, we that's never what make I, that. we that's, never that's, make that.
And I'm not saying that has anything to do with anything. I'm saying that when you work freelance and as a consultant, you actually have to sit down and figure out what your time is worth, what the market will bear, what your peers are making in the marketplace, what has happened, like real estate, you know, when it bottoms out, it bottoms out. But for an hour of my consulting time on the various things that I'm actually very, very good at and know a great deal about and lend a lot of expertise to, my average rate, not ripping anybody off, is about $100 to $120 an hour. I go a little bit higher sometimes. Sometimes I go a lot higher. Sometimes I go a little bit lower. But that's about right. That's in that range there. So that's how I value my own time. And I thoroughly love doing this, and I thoroughly enjoy doing it. And I have in my mind that time is money, that it is an opportunity cost.
And people do support us, and we appreciate it. And
absolutely.
If you love a podcast and you want it to keep going, support it.
You should. You really should.
That's aside. Let's talk about the culture wars.
Yeah. Speaking of which.
Amanda Chattel. Has been writing this week about her abortion. And she's young. She's in her 20s. And she writes about her abortion. She writes about a friend's abortion. There are other people writing about abortions that they had, and some of it is simply, you look at it and you say, yes, that person really needed to have an abortion. But again, it can't be about that question ever.
No.
And it occurred to me that in reading these narratives about this, how as a mother, I'm horrified. In some respects, that this could be my daughter behaving in a certain way or behaving in a way that's really not personally safe to her, not pregnancy aside, that some of the women in these narratives are going to bars and getting drunk and getting pregnant with someone that they never see again. And pregnancy aside, there are all kinds of risks involved in that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I cannot force that person to breed.
Right.
And that's the question that it always has to come back to is, can you force some other person to breed?
To take a child to term and then raise that child or give it up for adoption. And you cannot force another human being to do that.
Yep.
Period.
And the other thing that hit me right between the eyes like a bullet as I was reading these comments, I believe it was Amanda Chattel who said that one of the commenters at her earlier blog post said to her, and there was a lot of hate in these comments about you're a murderer, you're this, you're that. But one commenter said to her, you may never even have another baby. And the result is you will never give a true contribution to society.
Yep.
That shows in its bare, skinless essence the misogyny that is going on around this issue.
Her purpose is to make babies.
Yep. And I have started rereading. It's right by our bed. I have started rereading Margaret Atwood's seminal novel, The Handmaid's Tale, this week. If you haven't read it, you have to read it. I read it back in the late 80s when it came out. And it is so important to read because not only is it about what happens when the anti-abortion televangelists win, it's also about what happens when the environment gets destroyed to the point where massive numbers of women lose their fertility due to pollution, and what happens when And this is very clever on Margaret Atwood's part, and she often does this. She often twists the knife. What happens when radical anti-pornography feminists are stirred into this mix? And the burning of pornography and the anti-sex and all sex is rape and all sex is evil and penetration is rape. And, you know, she really goes after the Andrea Dworkin feminism in a smirky kind of way in this novel of, aha, you think I'm just going to go
you have no
after
idea
televangelists.
Yeah.
But this is all about proscription, period. And we're destroying our environment and our ability to do anything about it.
Well, and this I want to put in a brief advertisement for anti-centrism at this point.
Yeah.
Just to point out that not to pick on the late Andrea Dworkin, who I assume had many fine qualities, but I never saw any of them in her writing.
Don't sugarcoat it, Driftglass.
whatever my personal feelings about her may be, Andrea Dworkin never got elected to anything. Yeah. She never ran a political party. She never forced other people at legislative or actual physical gunpoint to do what she said or
she
wanted.
She was never made an honorary congressperson.
No. She never, her audience was small, and it was a lot. I'm not even going to comment on what it was. There were representatives across several domains, all of which would be considered elitist by anybody on the right. Yeah. Suffice it to say, she never inflicted by legislative mandate her opinions on anybody. She was powerless to do so. However, televangelists run this fucking country, or run half of it. They run a lot of our southern states. They're certainly in control of the primary process, and they have created the monster that is the GOP. And that's the difference. Their actions have real world consequences that Andrea Dworkin and people like her could only dream of. So there is no equivalence between the two. Although in fiction, I can definitely see why one would do something like that. Anyway, that was my brief advertisement for anti-centrism.
And while we're smacking around televangelists and right-wing religious zealots, I want to point out something from the Independent Gay Forum blog that went through the internal National Organization for Marriage emails that they were forced to release.
If I also may point out, hopping from the New York Times to In These Times to the Independent Gay Forum, you do get around, Blue Girl.
Yes, I do. All in one podcast.
Yeah.
The striking detail that National Organization for Marriage, the anti-gay marriage group,
who are awful, awful people,
budgeted $120,000 for a project to locate children of gay households willing to denounce their parents on camera.
Yep.
And the author of this blog left this comment at National Review Online, which I love, to say, whenever I hear National Organization of Marriage described as pro-family from now on, I will think of that fact.
Well, you know, it occurs to me that all North Korea would have to do to get all these people to emigrate is put a cross over their country, because they're exactly the same in their mindset. It is that kind of, you know, denounce your parents.
Denounce your parents. Yep.
And spy on people.
And one commenter at Independent Gay Forum I just love said, for a lot cheaper, I could get a ton of people from straight parents to denounce their parents on camera.
Yeah. You want denunciation? Ask any 16-year-old. You're not the boss to me.
Nobody understands me, right?
Yeah.
That was funny. Finally, culture war. Oh, you're going to talk a little bit about Pundit Checker in a minute, but
yeah.
Barack Obama made a very clear short statement that was clearly written by your friend and mine, Dave Plouffe, with Michelle Obama sitting behind him.
Yeah.
Made a very clear short statement about Planned Parenthood that everyone should go to YouTube and watch. It's just go Obama Planned Parenthood and you'll find it. It's him. It's his weekly message. And he said, women are not an interest group. They are mothers, sisters, and he goes on, they're family members, and can be trusted to make their own health care decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And he includes in that contraception by name. He says contraception. I can't wait to watch NOM and other groups use that in ads, because I just shake my head and think, why is this not common sense? But with a party that has lost its mind and boos soldiers and wants to eliminate departments that maintain our nuclear stockpile,
you and I both were alive during a time when on television nobody used the bathroom.
Yeah.
Nobody said divorce.
Yep.
Nobody said pregnant.
Yep.
I might have been a little boy, much littler than I am in the strikingly attractive picture at my blog, at my fundraiser, in my snappy red jacket. But there was a time not very long ago when those very concepts were so controversial that nobody could say them on television. They were not permitted by standards and practices from saying those words on television. And it's almost like watching half of the country, again, another Philip K. Dick novel, Counterclock World, run backwards, watching the clock run race backwards. Because now a president of the United States saying, women are smart and capable of making their own decisions, and using the word contraception on television is a source of 1901 indignant outrage on the part of the right. And it's startling to watch. I you know, we will survive this era and the human race will go on and do what we do. But I would like for 5 minutes to be able to look back at this moment in history from the perspective of 100 years from now or 200 years from now. And wonder, what the hell? Why were these people not put in cages for their own protection? Why wasn't there a reserve set up somewhere in the American Southwest where Republicans were free to go, do what they want to do, but were kept the hell out of the electoral process because they're so clearly out of their goddamn minds? And why did this country permit media conglomerates to pander to them and feed them lies and gin them up and make them even crazier than they were, even stupider than they were.
In the name of balance.
Yeah, well, in the name of money. Yeah. How is that? Yeah. How did they let that happen? What in the world? And the answer we keep pretending is that it's democracy, it's freedom. It's nothing of the sort.
It's money. It's
market
money.
Capitalism.
It's money. Yep.
Money, money, money. Anyway. I was going to mention just at, sort of in that same vein, there's a new thing.
We listen to a podcast.
Yeah, and a wonderful podcast.
I'm going to find it. While you're talking about this, I'm going to find out which one it was.
Because we listen to so many.
Yes,
so
we
much.
Do.
We work so hard, so very, very hard. We enjoy everything that we do. But there's someone has set up, these a couple of guys have set up Pundit Checker or Pundit Check, which I believe is starting off with sports and something else, but they're working their way up to politics. And I think it might have been on the media.
It is. It's on the media.
Yeah.
And it's their March 8th episode.
Yeah.
Holding pundits accountable for their predictions. Yeah. Tracking pundit predictions on the media, March 8th.
And I have a wonderful idea in theory. I can see why sitting around spitballing with a couple of my techie friends, if I were 25 or 30, that would be a cool thing to do if I were politically active at the time. But the larger question is, and I hate to put it this way, why bother? Mm-hmm. It's like giving a surgeon a better autoclave for sterilizing his instruments before performing surgery. That's great for the people who are performing surgery, who are interested, who are – that's a terrible analogy, but I'll explain why it was a great analogy 2 days ago when I if you care about the – cleanliness of the instruments, if you care about the integrity and the sharpness, if you care about the environment in which you operate and you only want facts and truth to be in there, then yes, having one more tool to make that possible is a great thing. But I can't imagine any conservative who is suddenly confronted with the 100th piece of evidence that everything they're being told every day is an absolute bald-faced lie.
Yeah.
Is going to suddenly go, oh my God, the first 99 times you proved to me that I'm a moron and I listen to liars, I didn't believe you. But this last time, that did it. That finally did it.
Yeah.
No, the answer is always liars always work the refs. And just like people attack Snopes because as a left-wing, you know, they're lefty. You know, they're funded by George Soros because they publish the facts that right-wingers are liars.
Well, like Stephen Colbert said, right, you know, reality has a left-wing bias.
Media Matters, you know, makes its daily bread by just publishing verbatim the stuff that crazy-ass Republicans say and conservatives say every day. It's all they do. And it drives them crazy because you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to hold them to account for the crap that they say. And so you can't listen to them because they're funded by George Soros.
Yeah.
And so one more tool, and centrists always pull exactly the same shit, which is, well, sure, Sean Hannity might be a liar, but I'm sure there are liberal liars too. And so they're not going to budge off the center just because they're, again, confronted with one more piece of evidence that the right wing is a bunch of lying lunatics.
No, but it is a parlor game for news junkies like us. Think that's what Pundit Checker is. So,
well, and I will just as another tiny aside, you broke my Lenten promise.
I'm sorry.
You read me a brief précis of what David Brooks's column was today.
Yeah, and you've been very good.
How accurately did I tell you exactly what he was going to say?
Within a percentage point, you told me what he was going to say. I told you the topic, and you said, here's what he's going to say, and then I read you the sentence. And it was within a percentage point of what you it just was, know. You just know what it's going to say.
Within one split infinitive.
You predicted what David Brooks would say. Yep.
And that's because he's a constant liar. He lies the same way all the time. He never changes
That's the thing.
And he never changes the game because he never has to. Because no one in the media will challenge him. And it doesn't really matter if we have one more tool to pass around among each other and say, see, here's a different focal length for this lens. And here you can see the lies in greater magnification than you've ever seen.
Living color. Yeah. Yeah.
It won't matter because the people who care about those things ain't the people who book David Brooks on television.
Yep. So let's move on to the Trayvon Martin case Trayvon Martin tragedy. And he had a couple of guests on early on in this discussion, and he's been covering every night solidly. See. And a couple
Chris
of
O'Donnell,
guests,
right?
Yeah, Chris Lawrence O'Donnell.
Right.
And a couple of his guests were wearing hoodies. And he said, "I'm not wearing a hoodie because I felt I needed to dress as a prosecutor."
Yeah.
I'm uncomfortable with Lawrence being the prosecutor in this case, and I think everyone needs to sort of be alert to that. I'm sure Lawrence is alert to that because really what he's calling for is an arrest and a trial. And that's what everyone who's on his show, I think, is wanting to have happen.
He is not calling for vigilantism.
No. Nope.
He's not calling for mobs. He's calling for justice.
But in the vacuum of no arrest and no accountability and, we don't really know what happened. Well, we do know what happened. The police fucked up. That's what happened.
Well, no,
the justice system fucked up.
Some idiot with a gun killed a kid.
An unarmed kid.
Went out of his way to kill an unarmed kid.
Yeah.
And then lied about it.
Yep. Even more than having the gun, this whole idea that he had a car.
Yep.
I was afraid for my life. Why didn't you get in your fucking car and drive away?
Yep.
And then call the police.
Because I'm Rambo. That's
why.
Rambo doesn't run away. I'm John Wayne. John Wayne would never do that.
Yeah.
That's why. And given the fact that the out-of-work CNN reporter turned George – who's now George
Zimmerman's best friend, now mere acquaintance.
Friend.
Yes, right.
And now that his father shot in Irish terrorist profile, shadow profile – talking about how the president's a racist.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. You were raised by Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
And he can't keep his fucking pie hole shut about – because he thinks he's right. That is where these people always fall apart. They can't keep their mouths shut because they really think that those Negroes need to be put in their place.
Yep.
And they have no trouble saying that out loud. And they scare up a special black friend who will happily stand in front of you and suck up bullets because, hey – he also happens to be an out-of-work CNN reporter looking to get his way back on television, presumably. And in the absence of anyone in the establishment taking any responsible action, the fact that this guy was let go, the fact that the cops never arrested, the fact that apparently they just pissed on the crime scene.
Yeah.
Because if there were blood spatters and spent shells and a bunch of other shit all over a murder scene, where the hell is that? Where are the all the stuff you see on any decent police procedural is supposed to be basic police procedure. That's why they call it a police procedural. And either none of that was done or it was done and somebody sat on it. And in the absence of anyone taking any responsibility, I have no problem with an advocate journalist like Lawrence O'Donnell, who makes very clear what his positions are, taking a position of, I am not going to permit people to come on my show and lie to me.
Yep.
And that's what all the Zimmerman clowns are doing. They're sneaking around. They're popping up all over Fox, and they're popping up all over friendly news stations and taking softball interviews and lying and making shit up. I believe in my gut he's innocent. I've known him for this long. He would never do such a thing. Do you know? Did you see? Were you there? Do you have facts? Well, no. Then why the hell are you on television? Well, because they
needed
a guest.
Yeah. I mean, it really got down to I don't know why I'm here,
Because I was booked by Fox News. That's why.
Yeah.
And so I have no problem with –
And to the credit, may I say that to the credit, I never link and never connect with, American Spectator magazine, which yeah. It breaks my heart to look at their sidebar and see that they have raised, to help battle liberal misinformation, they have raised over $16,000 from their readers and listeners. So just want to put that out there.
Let us remember what American Spectator was, the magazine that I can't remember the right-wing billionaire's name, but I will in a moment. That was the Arkansas Project magazine.
Yeah.
That was the magazine that David Brock worked for when he was a right-wing hitman before he saw the light.
To destroy Bill Clinton for anything that he could find.
And was given a sack of money to go destroy the Clintons. And he said
T. Boone Pickens.
Well, he was one of the funders. But this was the right-wing billionaires, there's so many of them. But this is the magazine that the Arkansas Project came out of, and who Brock later admitted, look, I was a political terrorist.
I
lied about Clinton's because I was paid to do so by this nut who wanted to take him down. And at the end of the day, that's who the American Spectator magazine really is.
American Spectator magazine is on record as saying count me out on Trayvon Martin.
Yep, that's how
bad it's gotten. And that the Republicans have no reason to intervene in this fight. They can be, I love how you hate to do this because this is what right-wing people do. Even the liberal media says such and such about Barack Obama. But even the American Spectator calls
Newt. When they say that, it's usually David Brooks.
David Brooks. Even the American Spectator calls Newt Gingrich a big lazy trout.
Yeah.
Jumping for the bait. And this article is really about, you guys have nowhere to stand on this. This is a 17-year-old unarmed kid.
Uh-huh.
And the police told Zimmerman not to pursue the kid.
Right.
Period. He disobeyed the police.
And I'm not going to – first of all, it's Richard Mellon Scaife or Scaife.
Yes, that one.
He's just – and that's
– He's the one that Callista Gingrich is always trying to get the phone number for.
Yes, in case Newt starts
– Maybe Newt can – All right. So anyway.
Well – Yeah. And I don't want to let our lightheartedness gloss over the fact that at the heart of the story is a murder and a tragedy, a lynching.
Yeah.
This really was a lynching. This is a lynching, and it was covered up by the police.
Yep.
And inartfully covered up by the police. And now we live in a culture where you can't get away with that for very long unless you have a much more sophisticated machine ready to spring into action. But what is much more interesting over the longer term is watching the right line up like iron filings under a magnet.
Yep.
No matter what the issue is, Barack Obama says that this is a tragedy. If I had a son, he'd look like this. I feel for the parents and we want justice. That is processed by Newt Gingrich as racism. And it's injecting politics into this. And it's awful and it's terrible. And he's a monster for doing that. Yep. Because that's how they're programmed to think. And until these people are electorally and culturally extinct, this is how our country's going to be. And this incident followed, which followed on the heels of Rush Limbaugh, which followed on the heels of this, which followed on the heels of Etch-A-Sketch, which followed. It's the evidence that has mounted up that the right is crazy and bigoted and fed entirely by lies and is completely psychotic and needs to be restrained is now indisputable. That's where I begin all arguments. If you still think the right has anything to say about anything, then I don't want to talk to you because you clearly haven't been paying attention to anything for the last 40 years.
And there was a point on Lawrence's show yesterday, I don't remember where it was, where I actually turned to you in a very nasty way and said, George Zimmerman's going to be hiring that vice presidential lady from Komen for damage control. It's all connected.
It is.
It's all connected.
I feel like there should be tax in the room here. I should be running yarn from point to point. Like a beautiful mind. See? It's all connected.
It's all connected.
The first word in
a beautiful mind.
Rush Limbaugh says on the air is the secret code. You understand it? No, it's not. It's, you know, it's not a conspiracy.
It's more blatant than that. It's way more blatant.
It's not a conspiracy. It's a confederation.
Yeah.
This is a confederacy of linked interests, all of whom want to take down the government, all of whom have been trained like circus seals who hate liberals no matter what we say, who have been trained that the liberals cannot participate in our political discussion, are not allowed on television, and whose opinions are always, 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 always wrong. When reality bites them in the ass, they have no place to go but deeper down the hole, and they look stupider every time they go. And again, I don't blame them for this. I think they are simply broken human beings who are a dead loss to society. I blame centrists, who no matter how crazy the right becomes, will always find a liberal to blame 50%.
Equally badly, yes.
Every single fucking time. Those are the people who need to have, you know, we need to have a long and serious discussion about them in my alley. They need to come over here. I need to explain to them in blunt Irish terms why they and they alone are responsible for fucking my country up. Anyway, having said that,
Anthony Scalia offered the real possibility that people will have the option to be turned away at the emergency room.
Yeah.
And, you know, that the emergency room door is the death panel right there stopping you from getting health insurance. The tremendous hypocrisy of the party of personal responsibility on this issue is unbelievable. And I also wanted to say I'm really impressed that there are 6 Catholics on the Supreme Court, and we're not talking about euthanasia in this argument of letting people die and what happens when you let people die, have the power to save them or to provide them with solace.
You don't have the power.
Theocracy is coming up. Don't think I don't know that.
You have the moral obligation to save them.
Yeah, but if you're going to vote, if you're going to, you know, be who you are and let your values in the room with you, where are your values?
Well, if this court
– and I don't want the court to judge anything based on what the Catholic Church says. I'm not saying that.
No.
At all. And, you know, I am an advocate for separation of church and state. I'm not trying to be a hypocrite here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm interested in what their position is based on their values. That's what I'm saying.
And I'm saying that if this Supreme Court – I fully expect them to overturn part or all of the law.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I expect that given the fact Republicans have shown no compunction about filibustering everything, the fantasy that this is going to lead to a single-payer backlash is a fantasy.
Yeah.
It will in 20 years or 30 years, but it won't in the next 5 or 10. I don't know what all those 26 million college students are going to do. I don't know what all the pre-existing condition folks are going to do, because all of those inconvenient realities about what it means to gut this health care law are just wished away. This is in some sense exactly like the run-up to Iraq. Exactly like the Bush tax cuts. When people said, but what about this? What about that? This, what about these? They were told,
fuck you.
You know, we'll be out by Christmas. The world will pay for itself. And when you're wrong, then what? And when none of that happened, when you're wrong, will you promise to step in front of a bus so we'll never, ever, ever have to listen to your fucking lies ever again? No, of course not. You'll be right back on Fox News with a full-time job, because that's who these people are. So when you gut the healthcare law and healthcare costs skyrocket and 50 million people are thrown off their health care and can't find it because you cut the budget for Medicare and Medicaid. And when all of that happens in relatively quickly in the blink of an eye, then what? And the answer will be, I'll be on my private island. I'll be in my gated community. Yeah. I have just enough inbred hillbilly morons who will vote for me no matter what I do because I wave the flag and I hold a Bible, that I can hold you off forever. I don't have to win Congress. All I have to have is a filibuster. All I have to have is a one-vote majority in the House so I can stop any goddamn thing you want to do. And I will tell you this. For me and me alone, I'm not speaking for anybody else, if the Supreme Court actually does this, having also allowed George Bush to steal the 2000 election, and having also allowed
corporations to be people.
Corporations. Yeah. Then this is the Dred Scott Court.
Yep.
Then this is Chief Justice Roger Taney's court. Mm-hmm. This is an illegitimate court who is now a radical social reengineering court and should be treated as such. Now, I don't think the head of the executive branch of government can come out and say that the head of the judicial branch of government is insane and illegitimate. But effectively speaking, we need to start thinking of the Supreme Court as an illegitimate underwriter of a radical agenda in every bit the same way we think of Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, and we thought of Jerry Falwell and the National Organization for Marriage. All these people have the same thing in mind, which is getting rid of you and me and putting the Confederacy back in place.
Mm-hmm. And we often in this podcast try to provide vocabulary.
Yes.
For people to talk to their neighbors and friends and coworkers. One of the things that I have started to do, and I've done it a couple of times already, and you know, the response is silence, but also thinking, I can tell. When someone who is under the age of 65 talks about so-and-so's in the hospital, or so-and-so had surgery, or so-and-so is seriously ill, or please pray for so-and-so because they're seriously ill, I bring up, you know, I'm really glad she can't be kicked off her health insurance.
Yep.
I'm really glad there's no lifetime cap for her insurance policy. Mm-hmm. Because of Obamacare. Thank God there's some protection for her or him to get health care and to have had this surgery. And if she has complications or problems or needs physical therapy or needs something else in addition, she won't be kicked off her insurance because she has a pre-existing condition. Thank goodness for that.
Can I mention one thing?
Yeah.
This is why, ladies and gentlemen, I married her. Because Blue Gal's natural instinct, we both have the same instinct. I hate to put it in Glengarry Glen Ross terms, because then you'll have to take another drink. But always be closing. This is something that the left is terrible at, because we're always fighting each battle as if it were separate from the last. But the right always fights the same way, which is at the end of every sentence, there's an amen, and liberals are monsters. Mm-hmm. Amen, and Obama's a monster. They never let the sentence end without saying their ritual.
We have to fight tyranny. Freedom.
I'm for freedom and tyranny, and I'm opposed to Barack Obama. They never, ever, ever let a sentence end without saying that. And it just the sheer goddamn repetition of it works.
Yep.
And we, and I include myself in this bundle, wander off into statistics and graphs. And don't you understand what a terrible thing this will be? No. And I try to close when I'm in my always be closing mode. I'm a little more Hulk smash.
Well, I use the word kick people in the crotch about it.
Yes. But Blue Gal comes from a much gentler, much more communitarian, and I will say religious place in her comments, which are hold their hands, sympathize, empathize, and emphasize that isn't it a good thing this person is able to be taken care of?
Yep.
Gently and kind. And honestly, I think her method is probably better than mine. I'm just hardwired to get, you know, sort of smash straight ahead in straight line kind of way.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Seriously, this is who I am spending the rest of my life with, which is a much calmer, kinder, gentler approach, long-term, arc of history kind of thing. And I think probably in the end, she's a smarter and better person, better liberal than I am.
Oh,
anyway,
enough of that.
Yep.
You have some local Chicago news to share with us.
I do. And I'm sure we're running late on the podcast and we have to fly, but I just wanted to bring up, that the good people at the Better Government Association have there's a two Chicago stories.
Is there a real Better Government Association?
There really is.
Oh, wow.
And I was familiar with them. I will not say I was a member of their hit squad, but back when they had matchbooks at the fake bar they ran to catch people in like the 70s or 80s that said beer, grog, and ale on the cover, which was BGA, Better Government Association.
Ah.
I've known several people who work for them, some as attorneys and some as affiliates, and they do good work. They really do good work. They undercover.
Are they a local Chicago group, or are they national?
No, they're local Chicago, and they do the Lord's work. And the BGA site has uncovered the fact that the outgoing chancellor of the Chicago school system, Mr. Wayne Watson, made an ass load of money, made way more than he ever should, made a ton of money on his salary, made a ton of money on his perks, was able to cash out his sick days just before the Rahm Emanuel administration told people they couldn't, was able to get that in for $12,000 or $15,000, is getting insurance for life. And they found him a new gig at Chicago State University, which is another political college, if you will, in Chicago. Now, Mr. Watson, I'm sure, has many virtues and is many great things, but he was, in the eyes of many, an empty, glad-handing suit. He was a political appointee from start to finish. The community college system in Chicago is technically part of the community college system throughout the state, but really it's the private province, private political province of the mayor of the city of Chicago. One of them is named after Richard M. Daley. I'm sorry, Richard J. Daley. And they are, they serve the hardest to serve. They have many fine features. They serve the hardest to serve students. I think of them as sort of the college of last resort.
This is all in the context of him getting like 12 golden parachutes at a time when the city is broke, the city is broke, the city is broke. And this is microcosm of what we're dealing with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and the Paul Ryan budget of we're broke, but we have $200,000 per millionaire for tax cuts.
We have more than enough. And you can make the argument, I think it's a stupid argument, but one can make the argument that tax cuts are simply not taking money away from you. It's your money and the government simply won't take it and take less of it. Fine, I get that. This is giving taxpayer money to someone. Mm-hmm. Mind you, this is at a time when they're cutting teacher salaries, when they're closing schools, when people I know and like very much are losing their jobs, are losing their pensions, are just cut. But understand, in Chicago, there is a thing called clout.
And there is in the House of Representatives too. I mean, the number of Republican people who have been able to stay in office just long enough to get their pension or to get their, you know, benefit and then not run for reelection because, you know, they were caught in some sex scandal. I'm thinking of Larry Craig. Larry Craig, they just let him run out his term because then he got his pension.
Because he's in the club. He's in the club.
And this happens. I thought you were going to talk about Rob Blagojevich's chief of staff, too.
Well, I will skip over that. The point I wanted to make about this is that one of the many functions the city college serves is a dumping ground for protected, clout-protected city upper managers.
Who don't know how to do anything.
And, you know, we're running out of funding. We're getting rid of your department. We're consolidating your whatever. There, as Lincoln said, too many pigs for the teats. Yeah. You know, there's too many people who have a clout ticket in their hand, which guarantees them a job for life because they have been dog loyal to the
machine.
But
there's always a teat over at the city college system.
And they dump these people in the city college system and they just disappear. It's a soft place for them to land. They find them a nice office pointing out towards a nice view where they can collect their pension, where they can collect your taxpayer. And overseeing this political burial ground was the chancellor.
Yeah.
And so despite the fact that the schools do terrible jobs and a lot of their programs are failing and the city college has enormous problems and the city is broke, somehow we managed to find a shitload of money way out of the box for even private sector compensation for this guy who has no particular distinguishing accomplishments other than the fact that he was the mayor's guy.
Yeah.
So and the flip side of that is – I will go over it very quickly if we have time.
Yeah, go ahead.
They sentenced, as you all know, there was a governor in Illinois named Rod Blagojevich, who was the second governor who will have been the second governor, consecutive governor in Illinois to go to jail. Rod Blagojevich has gone to jail for, I think, 14 years, 15 years, 16 years. But his chief of staff was sentenced yesterday. And his chief of staff was integral to his plans, helped him broker the deals, helped him do all the terrible things he did. But he turned state's evidence. They grabbed him by his balls and squeezed. And he gave up really crucial facts. But he broke the law, and he broke it in a big way, and he broke it over a long period of time. His name is John Harris, and John Harris was sentenced to 10 days in prison. 10 days, which is one-third as much as judges hand out for misdemeanor prostitution in Chicago.
First time misdemeanor prostitution.
Yeah, yeah. 30 days in jail. Oh, you aided and abetted this corrupt monster in wrecking the Illinois system and looting the treasury? 10 days, because you're a nice guy. Well, here's why John Harris got off. And this is why the story the judge gave is so hilarious. The judge
wrote it himself, wrote what happened. Yeah.
Well, the judge said essentially, you worked for a really mean boss. Rob Blagojevich was a monster to work for. He would just wear people down. This is the testimony that John Harris gave, and which basically the judge repeated back to him sympathetically. You know, I know you worked for this guy, and he was a jerk, but you did help him break the law. But he was a real monster. But you did, in fact, you know, aid and abet him. But I can understand how this guy was just such an overbearing asshole that he would just – well, okay, number one, quit. Number two, turn him in. But Mr. Harris didn't do either of those things. He just said – there were only so many arrows I could absorb, and eventually this guy just wore me down. So he sort of pinched himself as a babe in the woods who got caught up in this terrible political machine and was powerless to stop it and really couldn't bring himself to leave. But when push came to shove and the prosecutor put his balls in a vice, he gave it up, and therefore he's a good guy. And 10 days, because you
got
to –
plus, I got all these letters of recommendation from people I know who like you. And he said that in his comments.
And way down in the bottom of the article, or if you read the Drift Class blog, because I was writing about this in 2008, you will learn that John Harris was the chief budget guy for Mayor Daley.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's the most powerful and feared position outside of chief of staff. The head of the budget office is the most powerful and feared position in the city. It has been since Papa Daley ran the place, because if you know where the money is, you know what people are doing. Mm-hmm. When you know where the money goes, and these people are exercising dark magic that I cannot begin to understand. They go into a room, they come back out, they suddenly have billions of dollars they didn't have before because they moved some decimal points around. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. So when one of the mayors needs extra money, I need to sell a bunch of stuff. I need to get rid of this. I need a $1 billion. The budget guy goes out and comes back with $1 billion. And nobody asks too many questions about how that happens. It turns out in the last case, it was selling off the parking meters, the city's parking meters, to prop up the Daley administration for one more year. That money was supposed to last 75 years. It lasted 1 year.
Yep.
It's gone. It's fucking – and everybody knew it was going to be gone. Everybody knew this was Daley's last hurrah. And so John Harris was his budget director.
Arguably, and he knows where all the bodies are buried.
That's what gets you 10 days
for corruption is.
And he knew where they were buried when he was working for Daley. Yeah. Then he stepped off that. He was very successful. He was brought in because the former budget director was a criminal. Yeah. And he was put in charge of the place because the guy prior to him presided over the hired truck scandal, which was a disaster, which was just.
That was a real explosion in everybody's face. No one could survive that.
No. And the Mayor Daley started throwing people at the problem and got himself away from it. He got himself separated from this raging fire. Yeah. So John Harris goddamn well knows how the system works, because you can't be the budget director for the city of Chicago and not understand how the system works and how corrupt and accommodating and clout ridden the system is.
I want to recommend to everyone, because we have to end here.
Well, I'm just saying, he stepped directly from that job to being the chief of staff for Rod Blagojevich.
Rod Blagojevich gets 14 years.
And John Harris, like, I didn't know it was so corrupt.
He was so mean. He was mean to me. 10 days.
And the many letter of recommendations that the judge got from
people he knows.
Very highly placed political people. It's like, John's a good guy. Maybe you should go light on him. He's a real sweet guy.
Job is John Harris going to get in the city college system when he gets out of jail after 10 days? That's what we need to know. And if you love hearing about the ins and outs of the soap opera of Chicago politics as much as I do from Drift Class, go over to his blog because he hasn't let go of Chicago. You can take the boy out of Chicago, but you can't take the Chicago out of the blogger, let me tell you.
Well, if I may quote Fast Eddie Felsen from the Hustler and The Color of Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some stuff happened to me in Chicago. I can't really go back there.
Wasn't that in your personal ad?
Yes, that's on my resume.
That's on your resume.
We'll travel any place but Chicago.
But Chicago. I can't meet you in Chicago because of my thing.
Or to quote Marcellus Wallace from Pulp Fiction, yeah. I lost my Chicago privileges.
Yeah.
To misquote Marcellus Wallace. Anyway.
Thank you for listening. Happy blogiversary, Driftglass.
Thank you.
You can listen to our podcast for free at a variety of places. At our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. At our Facebook page, and we have lots and lots of links. I've already put them up at our Facebook page. I'm Frances Langum on Facebook, Langum, if you'd like to friend me at Facebook. But on our Facebook page, we have all the links to all of these kind of things, including the Rachel Maddow interview at Fresh Air, et cetera, et cetera. You can go there and find all those links. We're on iTunes and available through our fabulous app, which is available at the iTunes Store, the Professional Left app. We're on the amazing Stitcher Radio, and we are on netrootsradio.blogspot.com from 6 to 7 Pacific Time and 9 to 10 Eastern on Saturday nights. We got a iTunes review this past week that I wanted to share. I did share it on the Facebook page from iTunes reviewer Bab and Bangkok. I have never missed a podcast. They've led the way for so much. If I had the funds, I would give them whatever they needed to have all family and work needs met. Please send them reinforcements. And thanks, Driftglass and Bluegal, for doing what you continue to do so well. And we appreciate that comment so much. Again, I put it up at our Facebook page. Yeah. But listen, folks, we are not waiting for you to win the Mega Millions jackpot.
No.
To meet all of our needs or to have all family and work needs met. We're asking for $5.
Or and we never turn down more. Just so
we never turn down more. And let me remind everyone, when you give $5, you get an email back from me acknowledging and thanking you for your contribution. When you send us any amount, we send you an email acknowledging and thanking you for that. If you send us $15 or more, we send you by snail mail a notepad and a thank you note. And I believe you, on your fundraiser, send thank you notes to everyone who sends you a contribution.
I am a much poorer and more depressed correspondent than Bluegal is. But eventually, within a week or so, I always personally thank everyone who contributes. And this is, again, a little bit of an end note here. I got a ton of email about writing a book that was evenly distributed across the spectrum of, for God's sakes, don't do it. It's a complete waste of time. You should do it tomorrow. I'll buy it tomorrow. I just got so many responses that I haven't responded to
them. Well,
you're
responding right now to everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but I got a huge reply. And thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bluegal's a much better correspondent.
Well, but what I wanted to add to that is, after that, we leave you alone.
Yep.
We don't come back and ask you for more. We don't sell your name to anyone else. We don't start hitting you up for money on a regular basis. There are people who give monthly to us, and there's a way to do that at our podcast website. You can automatically set it up to give us $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month. That's wonderful. We love that. But we don't hit you up for more. So we appreciate your support of our work.
Of course, right now.
Hey, if you've already sent your contribution, we appreciate it. Thank you. And we will not email you again to ask you for more that way. We don't do that because we don't like it when people do that to us.
No.
So you can contribute two ways. One is at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. You can also write us or send a check to Professional Left Podcast, P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. And all of this information is at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. We have an email address. It is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. You can write to us at any time. Be aware that if you write us at that address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you tell us otherwise.
Oh, and one more detail about email addresses. Mm-hmm. I just went back to do some cross-posting or doing a little experiment with my long-defunct Yahoo account, mm-hmm. and found that some dear sweet people are still emailing me there.
Oh, no. Your email is driftglass99@gmail.com.
Yep. Yep.
And my email address is bluegalsblog@gmail.com.
Yep.
Or you can reach both of us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
And that goes to both of us.
Yeah, so
every week we post an internet kitty to our website and to our Facebook page. The internet kitty this week is Jody, and Jody is from Ireland.
Oh.
And she's sunning herself in the internet kitty picture. So she's a lovely cat. And if you want to send us a picture of your internet kitty, we will put them in the queue to show up at our website. Every week we have an internet kitty.
Mm-hmm.
And we look forward to seeing those internet kitties. Speaking of that, Drift Class, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, the internet kitties have promised to fight on to Tampa.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Drift Glass Blue Gal Podcast.